Okay, thank you again for this opportunity, and I will try and see if I can do a kind of a short presentation here. Karthik is going to do a more elaborate SIM travel-based presentation on Tuesday afternoon, and I certainly don't want to steal away his thunder because this is primarily what his dissertation was about, so I think he's probably best positioned to talk about it. So I'll just maybe hit some highlights and talk about what we've been thinking about and what we've been trying to do lately. So again, this is kind of the SIM travel project. We're trying to model the urban continuum going from land use all the way to network dynamics and route dynamics. So it was a full team with Paul Waddell and Liming Wong from UC Berkeley, with Urban SIM being the land use model system. Ourselves, Karthik being a primary force, along with a few other students from Arizona State with the population synthesizer and the activity travel simulator, and then Yi Chang and his folks, Mark Hickman and so on, at the University of Arizona with the dynamic traffic assignment model, primarily based on Dynast, but a more multi-resolution system that is more detailed at the simulation level, so it's actually called Malta, which is again, but a DTA, a full-fledged DTA with simulation. So, and I do thank everybody involved. I do want to also just acknowledge that this was one of the first exploratory advanced research projects funded by FHWA. We're finally, I think, seeing the end of the tunnel, and hope to wrap this up. With reports and so on. Brian Gardner was the project manager and a very patient one at that. And we also had a peer review panel and Kostas is on the peer review panel. David Boyce, Marin, John Glebe, Vladimir Keith, and Ye Chung Sen. So I do want to thank and acknowledge the peer review panel that provided a lot of useful input. Haven't engaged them a lot in the last year as we tried to bring everything together. But we certainly used a lot of their input to really try and formulate everything. So, again, the broad goal was to develop kind of this open source set of tools, methods, and infrastructure that would essentially allow for integrated modeling of land use transport systems. And again, I use the word integrated rather loosely. I do know Hani makes this distinction between integrated interface and juxtapose. And I don't know where we fall in that spectrum, but we've certainly tried. So lots of nice design considerations. Just to highlight, between travel demand and traffic assignment, we kind of recognize the contemporaneous and instantaneous feedback between those two. But the interaction with land use is more over time. So what comes out of traffic assignment is perhaps network accessibility measures that influence land use over time. There's perhaps some lag with respect to longer-term location choices or land use changes. And similarly, land use changes impact travel demand. That, again, is kind of a unidirectional impact. Again, as land use evolves, so do activity travel patterns in response to those changes in the activity supply. I will skip that and go straight to this. Just to recap this design, again, I think many of you may have seen this in various forms in some shape or the other. But basically, the travel demand and dynamic traffic assignment model integration is based on a concept that I certainly do not want to take credit. I should give at least credit to our advisor. So Ryuichi Kitamura, the late Ryuichi Kitamura, presented something very similar. In fact, I think I do have his slide from the 2008 Innovations in Travel Modeling Conference that was held in Portland, Oregon. And I believe this may have been his last formal conference presentation in the U.S. before he passed away. So, but you can see kind of this concept that, we dreamt of fully trying to realize in a fully operational system. And so that's what this represents, with the activity travel demand model constantly interacting with the dynamic traffic assignment model. And essentially, on a minute-by-minute basis, the travel demand model, or the Open AMOS, the Activity Mobility Simulator, is feeding the trips that are departing in that given minute. And essentially, that set of trips is provided to the dynamic traffic assignment model that actually routes and simulates those trips through the network. And on a minute-by-minute basis, the DTA model is informing the activity travel model of the set of trips that have arrived at their destination. And now the activity-based model needs to go ahead and determine what are these people going to do based on the actual arrival time at the destination. So if they were delayed due to congestion or arrived early because for some reason there was less congestion, right, the activity duration and subsequent activity travel engagement is going to be impacted. So there's this minute-by-minute interaction. This is not feedback loops. This is essentially what you experience. So we're trying to make this a behavioral integration, kind of replicating what people experience. You have some perception of what is an expected travel time. So you're going to depart in a certain minute of the day to go to a destination, and then you actually experience that episode on the network and then arrive at a certain arrival time that's dependent on network conditions that prevail at that moment, at the time that you're actually executing the trip. So in other words, your activity travel choices are based on some accumulated knowledge or expectation of travel times, but your actual arrival time is dependent on network conditions that prevail. And so this was our attempt at trying to operationalize that real experience of what people actually go through on a daily basis with their activity travel patterns, and pretty much was what Ryuichi had tried to describe in all of his series of papers on PCATS DevNets. So that's the prism-constrained activity travel simulator and the dynamic event-based network simulator. That has been implemented in some fashion in various places in Japan, in Osaka, in Kyoto, and so on, by his group at Kyoto University. There are some issues that we've wrestled with in terms of convergence. We do know on the supply side, the traffic assignment folks have kind of come up with these nice gap functions and so on that they can monitor towards convergence and see at what point the network side has actually reached convergence. On the demand side, I don't think we necessarily have as strong a handle. Okay, so that is something we have been trying to look at. Of course, right now, what we essentially do is compare daily trip tables from one iteration to the next. So there is an iterative process here where essentially after you complete a 1440-minute run, you essentially have new link travel times based on what happened on the network in one iteration. You update the OD travel times, and this now starts a new iteration. So essentially, this is some accumulated knowledge or expectation of travel times that's now going to influence your activity travel patterns. Whether this is mimicking some learning and adaptation process, I don't necessarily want to argue either, one way or the other. But I think, to some extent, it just provides a basis for having expected travel times influencing activity travel choices and actual network conditions influencing arrival times that you experience and the subsequent activity travel choices. So if you are delayed due to congestion, it's going to impact. You may cancel, delete activities, modify destinations, and so on over the remainder of the day. So that is what we do until pretty much the OD travel times and perhaps on the demand side, daily trip tables reach convergence. Again, something we're kind of wrestling with. This just talks about the time-space prism constraints, and I know we've talked about that quite a bit. Again, in Open AMOS, or the Activity Mobility Simulator that we've been working on, we do have the time-space prism constraints, except those constraints can be moved. So we do have kind of an initial skeleton of work start times, work end times, school start times, school end times. But all of those are fungible. They can be shifted based on how the rest of the activity pattern evolves. So if you're late, you're late. There's, you know, a time-space prism constraint is going to have to move and get adjusted in response to what you experienced on the network. So we do recognize there are alternate integration paradigms, and I guess I will just pick on Chandra because he didn't show up. So this is, for example, a paper they did in 2008 based on the SemDAP-Vista integration, and you can see it's a sequential integration, right? So you just do the activity travel model. SemDAP is run in its entirety for a day based on an updated set of level of service skims. And then that, once you have the individual activity travel patterns, you have time of day OD matrices, then you run Vista for the entire day. And then again, you get updated level of service. So there is this sequential paradigm, which I think is quite a common paradigm that we've noticed in the literature, as opposed to the more minute-by-minute dynamic interaction that we've tried to incorporate with sim travel. And why this dynamic approach to integration? Because Sean Doherty, our very good friend, wrote in his 2005 Fed Burgraff award-winning paper that, in a survey, responses indicated that a large portion of activities were planned impulsively. They were not planned at the beginning of the day or the previous day or anything of that nature. They were literally planned spur of the moment, impulsively, including almost 30% of all activities or 20% of activity time. So the 30% of activities that were planned impulsively accounted for 20% of activity time spent. An even higher proportion of modifications and deletions. So these were activities that were planned previously, not planned impulsively or made impulsively, but they were planned previously, but then they were modified or deleted impulsively. And that happened to be 45.3%, nearly half modifications and deletions happened impulsively. You didn't kind of modify or think, oh, you know what, I'm not going to do that activity. That didn't happen, you know, ahead of the activity. It happened literally impulsively, and in some cases in the middle of the activity when it came to modifications, with about half of these impulsively changed during the activity. So with that level of dynamics, and we can only expect the amount of dynamics and impulsive activity, engagement, modification, and deletion to only increase with the ubiquitous technology that we have now, we fully expect that this kind of dynamic integration is what we probably need to accommodate the types of time-space interactions that we want to model. So we've tried to exercise OpenAMOS and this whole integrated model system in a subportion of Maricopa County, covering about 500,000 population, but then we load all of the background traffic from the OD tables to simulate congestion and so on. So this is the case study area. With the sequential versus the dynamic, you can see there is some, you know, so I think the bottom one is the expected. That's the expected, and this is the experience. So you can see if you just take the expected, so you take the level of service skims coming out of a DTA model in a sequential framework, you would actually have some gaps or overlaps. In this case, for example, you would actually have an overlap. So you would have gaps and overlaps, which would require either people to be at two places at once or for people to be magically moved. And so you would have this inconsistency in terms of the accounting of the 1440 minutes. With the dynamic, there is this perfect consistency in temporal order. So that's all about the wide dynamic approach to integration. The other one, and this is the one that Karthik is going to talk about a lot on Tuesday, is being able to simulate network disruptions. So when you have these instantaneous temporary network disruptions because of a severe incident right in the middle of the day, suddenly network conditions are all changing. So the idea is, how would you be able to simulate the impacts of that with a sequential model system, right? With a dynamic model system, the way we've tried to integrate this on a minute-by-minute basis, it's very easy to take care of these dynamic changes in the network and see how people are going to change or adapt their activity travel schedule when they face a severe incident situation. They're delayed by an hour, right? And all kinds of things then have cascading effects for the rest of the day. So again, I'm not going to talk through this too much, but I will say we have some limitations even with our current framework. Even though we think we've solved the world's problems, we actually still have limitations in terms of trying to be able to accommodate en route. So what do you do if you're actually stuck in congestion, doing en route route switching and en route modification of your activity schedule? So you decide, I was headed to that destination, I'm not going to go there anymore, I'm going to switch and just go on to my next fixed activity, right? So trying to accommodate those, that level of dynamics, we have found to be a greater challenge. Another one that we're trying to incorporate in a big way is tracking vehicles and persons. So we've all talked about intra-household interactions. So now intra-household interactions, of course, has a lot to do with joint activity engagement versus task allocation. But there's also a lot to do with vehicle allocation, so who's using which vehicle and which vehicle is available, so which means you have to track vehicles. This has direct implications for energy emissions and the kinds of things with SB 375 in California. So again, trying to do this micro-tracking of vehicles and persons certainly has been a challenge. More challenging is trying to represent the types of impulsive things that can happen, where literally I'm at work, my wife is somewhere else, we just call each other on the cell phone and decide spontaneously to meet somewhere else for dinner, and we're coming from different origins with different cars, but we're meeting at a certain destination. All of this is happening impulsively. How do you accommodate that types of interaction? So literally, you got to be scanning for available household members at every decision point to see if there's an opportunity to do a joint activity, and if so, how and where are people going to get together to do that joint activity? So this constant need for scanning availability of people and vehicles, something we've found to be a non-trivial problem. Sensitivity to accessibility. I think Costas has solved that problem, so I'll kind of leave that. One thing that I think Karthik will talk about on Tuesday is something we've tried to do with the pricing scenario, how you can try to simulate a pricing scenario with the dynamic integration that we have done. So again, I'll kind of just throw that teaser out there and leave it for Karthik perhaps to explain on Tuesday how we've done that. I think we've come up with a pretty neat way within this dynamic integration to compute generalized cost, actually a generalized travel time, which dictates your activity travel choices, but then the actual travel time on the network dictates your arrival time at a destination. So I think that kind of dual approach to treating generalized cost provides some solution to that. So again, I think we have some promising developments, but certainly some issues, some places to work on to further be able to take advantage of the types of computational advances and data handling infrastructure we have. But at the same time, I think behaviorally things are getting more complex, and there is a necessity to make things more real-time sensitive. So with that, thank you.
Going back to when do we feed back the travel time as a piece of information for the simulated traveler? Mm-hmm. I like your reasoning why we should do minute by minute integration when we rescheduling happens due to travel time increase or congestion. But we don't do the same thing with rescheduling when the activity is executed, right? So we are participating in this meeting, and somebody went longer with the talk, right?
Lunch was slow.
So then we rescheduled all our activities, including our lunch, and we canceled traveling outside the hotel to go to another and coming back, right?
So all of that, we feel, we can effectively capture in this paradigm. So essentially, if you arrive later than you had expected, so right, if in congestion you arrive later, but then your prism says that you have to be at work here, your activity duration will get shrunk.
But it's the activity that is late, not the travel.
Right.
Going the other way.
It's exactly the other way around. We have a very sensitive schedule to the travel time, but not as sensitive to the activity time.
Oh, I see.
That's just a question of heuristics.
Okay.
The server data doesn't give you information on what the scheduling or rescheduling heuristics are.
Yeah.
We implemented a version of the scheduling rescheduling, and given more information about heuristics, we can incorporate them. But the neat thing about this framework, it allows you to do it.
All I'm raising is the issue that maybe the causality of the dependency is such that because we are interested in congestion levels and what it does, we forget that activity durations
may actually impact where you decide to pursue an activity. Yeah.
Which supports actually my idea that we shouldn't be doing
so. Indeed, and I think some of this is a question of causality.
Yeah.
And yes, so in this paradigm, you have more of the activity duration being driven by the travel duration that you experience, given that you have chosen a certain destination.
Maybe what it means is that if your activity goes long, you'll drive faster.
A lot of us have done that.
Absolutely.
And I got a ticket for that yesterday. second actually 1 month, so now I cannot even know the
point. You're going to start walking very soon.
I have a short question.
Yeah, Peter.
I have actually maybe a difficult one. Your opinion again. When people plan, okay, for example, like what Mama presented, they physically separate planning level and execution level. But in reality, it's blurred because what happens? You have a certain plan. Now, some in the middle of the day, the trip proved to be longer or something. There are basically mathematically two ways to tackle. You can go into complexity of rescheduling in real time. Or you can say, you know what, let's wait for the next iteration. Reiterate it. So in reality, you have both mechanisms, but actually they duplicate each other in a sense. So how it's resolved here? This planning level, execution level, and equilibration.
So there's a planning level in the sense that a lot of the what we traditionally consider fixed activities or mandatory activities perhaps get placed into a skeleton. And there's some child dependencies that also get placed into a skeleton, right? So that is what we think tend to be planned. Okay, all of the other activities are happening in continuous time, right? Around these initially planned activities, where you are either kind of tied in because you have to take care of somebody else, or because you have other mandatory activities. So there is a planning and execution level. We are indeed blurring that line, okay? So there isn't this very hard distinction between these two levels. So we're kind of trying to blur that line, and it is largely based on what Sean Doherty reported in his paper, that there isn't this very hard distinction. If you've got nearly a third of the activities being planned spur of the moment, right? That's a third of the activities. It's not an insignificant number that's being impulsively undertaken. So with that kind of are finding, we feel that this distinction of a planning level from an execution level may be convenient, but is perhaps not behaviorally accurate. And so we've got to just blow that line and said, essentially, you are constantly making adjustments to your activity travel schedule over the course of the day in response to what you're experiencing on the network. So if you arrive early, maybe you decide, you know what, I have a little time, I'm going to run to the bank and take care of something. Right? So you can undertake yet another activity. If you're running late, you just can't. You're not going to undertake care.
Okay, no, it's a good point, because I understand this concept. It looks to me a little bit situation those months. Well, I think, I don't remember exactly, but I think from his publication, he talked about schedule. So if you, yeah, a lot of activities are in schedule. But if you take and choose a sequence of activities, I don't believe that so many of them, I think that most of the people, with 90% of the sequences are pre-planned. So what happens in reality, yeah, you can move it 5 minutes later, but I
think if a third of the activities are being planned implicitly, to me the sequence is literally meaningless.
Well, Rob, there is something else also we need to be careful about. What we define impulsive. Impulsive can be in a moment before applying that, and some of the papers I worked actually challenged many of those papers and models.
Right.
We have defined some of the impulsive, the day of activity is impulsive.
Conceived of within the hour of the execution.
Yeah, I think it's just either during the activity or it is within literally an hour of the activity.
Was it
just
for students?
I don't remember, but I mean,
I think actually
look at
the
twist on it, twist on this. I mean, which is a slightly different argument, is that to try to model what's planned versus impulsive, other than sort of core things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some core things, right? Which I think is skeletal. But then, a dentist appointment is not, it's not impulsive, but on the other hand, when is that scheduling?
Yeah.
We're not modeling the entire life of somebody. So whether the dentist appointment was pre-scheduled or not, I'm not sure it's a practical modeling thing.
Well, there is something we could do.
Said pre-plan for 4 weeks, and that doesn't actually, that's not only limited to mandatory activities like work and school.
Right.
It's just anything that we think it's possible to pre-plan,
right.
We pre-plan, and then we modify the actual overtime, but then for 1 week, for 7 days, we do very detailed planning, and then every day, every moment basically, it's just that linkage that we're talking about, every 15 minutes we revisit the schedule of the person,
yeah.
So if there's any new activity added, something is shifted,
well,
something deleted, so yeah. Every 15 minutes
we
modify it.
They cancel
it. Yeah.
So, no, I think that's very fair. That a lot of what perhaps we're trying to model is discretionary or flexible, right? If time is available, you might pursue an activity. So medical dental is included. It's not a mandatory activity, but I think most medical dental are probably pre-planned and fixed ahead of time. But presumably, I think people try to schedule those activities around their work and school.
I'm actually more or less green. Slightly
different question. In our implementations, we use a slightly different strategy. So we have a similar thing, but rather than having the feedback on a minute-by-minute basis, we
I don't call this minute-by-minute interaction as feedback.
Okay.
See, that's why I'd like to make that very strong distinction, because people, I think, mistake this minute-by-minute interaction as feedback.
So what we decided to do is to identify decision points. Points in time and space where people can actually change their schedule. And in reality, the implementation, we use nodes in the network because you cannot turn back, for instance. And we use the start and end time of the activities. And there the updating takes place.
I don't think that is a
takes much less computing time. So I'm wondering why you
our decision points are at when the person has completed an activity or has an open prism started.
So we don't
scan
them every
14
minutes.
So, Harry, in many ways, if you obviously a co-wrote a paper with me, where you compare, I guess, albatross with TCAS. So this is really, in some ways, kind of an enhanced operationalization of TCAS.
Okay, that comparison was or something else. But
I understand.
The other thing that I wondered, you're talking about expected times. Does it mean you are incorporating a certainty in the whole system, or is it just...
It's just that Calvin's comes from the previous iteration.
Okay, because we do take into account the certainty in the whole system.
And that's giving some flexibility
in terms of the behavior. Because again, in reality, people don't know in terms of the uncertainty of the parameters. And if you start incorporating that, you can deal with different strategies and uncertainty, and how that will impact the adaptation.
We're assuming that either the travel time from the previous iteration or the travel time averaged over several previous iterations remains in your memory. And that's just where it's
changing. But of course, what will happen in reality, I mean, people get exposed to different travel times.
That's right.
So it's they don't necessarily update their, in your world, expectations. Because they may think, okay, this is just the outlier. And if they already experience it a lot, the next experience also doesn't have that much of an impact. So I think by incorporating that, you probably get more stable solutions, more robust simulations, and you can cope with the things that you're talking about. Because indeed, in reality, in our clinical work, we found out that people indeed don't have much mental effort in changing. So the easy thing to go first, which is actually your point of departure time and travel time. We know that 80% behave like that. And then only if that doesn't work, they would consider more dramatic changes in their schedules. And ultimately, of course, they may decide to start living somewhere else. But that is only true in 1% of the cases. And even if the stress in the whole system has been accumulated for many times. And again, that would be, I guess, another opportunity of expanding this network into directions that we have been talking about today, like the mathematical approach. But I think there's also behavior linked to that, why you could, I guess, argue that might be useful.
My point again, just intuitive, I do totally agree with you that people do a lot of spontaneity, but in terms of small schedule adjustments, it looks to me like, in terms of generation of activities and sequences, since it's almost like no lemons today, I agree with Harry. Even if it makes sense, people just don't have information, don't think. So what mathematically they do, they just do it next day substantively. So in my mind, like the proportion between day-to-day equilibration and rescheduling on the given day is different.
We can certainly talk about that. I mean, the difference between expected and experienced isn't going to be so dramatic, generally speaking, that there would be this massive readjustment on any given day. It would happen only if there's an extreme event, right?
Yeah.
And we feel that this platform offers you the ability to simulate the impact of an extreme event, okay, and do the suddenly within day, major schedule readjustments in response to an extreme. But otherwise, the difference between expected and experienced is rather subtle, right? Because you've accumulated some evidence of travel times, and now you're experiencing something on the network that's going to be different by minutes, right? And so there'll be these fine adjustments, right? There's not going to be dramatic readjustments, unless, again, the experienced travel time is very, very different from expected or what has been accumulated in the network. And, again, that happens only if you have.
Well, I have one very quick clarification question, and then we have to move to David. You didn't finish the sentence that you started, but in response to Harry, you second by second feedback. So what is then what we call it? What we're doing if it's not feedback?
We just call it interaction.
Yeah, just communicating the.
It's just communication.
So that feedback is not used actually for the modifying the schedule.
Feedback is at the end of a
after end of the day under
basis. It's simply exchange of information.
It's a time-driven simulation where the time step is
one. Exactly.
But your network simulation is still a single process. You have a goal.
No. It is a minute-by-minute. Literally, Monta stops every minute.
And
it jumps open Amos. Here is the set of trips that have arrived at their destination in this minute. Now do what you want with them. And also, open Amos, at every minute, pauses and informs Monta. Here's the set of trips in the entire region that are departing to their destination in this minute.
So if you want to have a scheduler there, you should be able to.
There's a minute by minute handshaking between the two systems.
Previous travel time. Okay, so let's go ahead actually to the next presentation. Thank you.